thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us today. This is always a special treat for me.
I would say both personally and professionally. I'm not sure you're using that word correctly.
Special. Yeah, it is. Right. Rob and I met, I'm going to guess 15 years ago, but I don't know if it was that long ago.
No, I think it was, yeah.
When Rob was with the Fan 960, and he and I would see each other at a variety of events, and we would chat about our views on sport and recreation, physical activity, the sports system, etc. And we just developed a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rob said, "Hey, do you want to just phone into the radio station every now and then, and we'll just have a chat live?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah." So, you know, it wasn't necessarily scheduled and it wasn't always purposeful, but, you know, he would say, "Okay, we've got some time, you know, today. Why don't you give me a quick call?" So I would call and we would just chat again about kind of the issues of the day as it related to sport. And that further developed our friendship. And then we would connect on any number of boards that you sat on,
yeah,
or groups,
yeah,
that I was a part of. So that would include like Sport Calgary, Parachute for Pets. I mean, yep, when you were with the Calgary Hitmen.
Yep.
So again, our relationship evolved and changed over time through a variety of other organizations. And then I want to say the earlier stages of podcasts.
I would say about 2015, 2016, in that range. I don't know if it was early stages, but maybe the mid stages.
Yeah, we thought, well, what, should we record some of these meandering conversations? And I think my response was, well, like, who's going to listen to that? And you were like, well, who cares? Like, let's just do it and we'll throw it out there and see what happens. And so we started doing it. How many podcasts do you think we've done?
Oh, all in total, probably 40-ish, in that range. I think, you know, we probably did about 10, 15 for the radio station, and then it evolved into Sport Calgary and really kind of evolved into being part of your classes, right?
Yeah.
We've been doing this for almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, so the last 4 or 5 years, certainly post-COVID,
yeah.
We haven't been doing regular podcasts with the exception of when I've had a class.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of a fun opportunity to bring you in. And we would just record our conversations as it related to the topics that the students were,
right,
were kind of focusing on. And so that's been our podcast for the last or 4 years. Yeah. And I really enjoy the opportunity to connect with you and just to have a conversation about what's happening in our industry. And I very much appreciate you coming to campus today and
happy to do this,
being in front of our students. Yeah, so if any of you are listening to this at a later date, there's a live studio audience here.
Yeah. I think they've pretty much expect that from us now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also worth noting that the class started, it's an 8:30 a.m. class.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up.
Yeah. So, yeah, it may not be the most raucous or boisterous of crowds, but they're awesome.
Not when you made them
awesome
sit for 20
students.
Minutes.
No, that's true, and I was late again.
Yeah,
that's on me. So let's get going.
Okay. We've solved nothing, by the way.
Oh, that's true. The name of our podcast was not one that we came up with initially. We really didn't have a name for probably the first 5 to 10 podcasts.
Yeah.
I think we just, it was like Rob and Dave,
yeah,
chatting. And then ultimately we realized that at the end of every podcast, we would kind of look at each other and think, okay, we've been yammering on for, you know, 45 minutes now and we've really solved nothing. And that became the name of our podcast. We've solved nothing. However, I'd like to think in some very small way, maybe we have at least planted some seeds for
Well, I think
solutions.
If you look back at the things that we've talked about, I mean, we were ahead of the Olympic debate in 2018 in the eventual referendum there. I think also in that same year was the legalization of sports gambling and cannabis. And we had those conversations and what the impact would have on sports. And I think we missed on sports gambling. I don't think we, at that in 2018, I don't think we predicted the true impact and the, you know, just the way it's kind of taken over sport. But I think we've been there ahead of things before. And we had a great conversation last year with the soccer, right, about mm-hmm. facilities. And mm-hmm. then Carlo Bruno from Calgary Minor Soccer did the Fields Forever program. And, you know, we've seen Game Plan come through the city now with some contributions to that. So, yeah, I'd like to think we're out in front of stuff sometimes.
Sometimes. My favorite still, and the students know that this is a pet topic of mine, is wrestling.
Yes.
We had Bret Hart visiting us last Tuesday, which is
always a thrill. Yet somehow I never get invited to those.
Yeah, Rob was ahead of the curve in the wrestling event with the Hitmen, and you were the one who shepherded and kind of stewarded that whole decision. And so one of the projects that the students are working on that I kind of love, I'd love to get your insight on, is they're coming up with theme ideas for any of the CSEC teams other than the Calgary Flames. So
right.
Calgary Hitmen, Roughnecks,
right.
Or Wranglers in particular. And they have to come up with a theme that will drive the entire day. And so Paw Patrol was for the Hitmen a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
The Teddy Bear Toss, of course, is an annual event. They had the wrestling game a couple weeks ago. The Wranglers have a French-themed day.
Yep.
And so the students aren't allowed to pick a theme that's already been used by CSEC. They have to come up with something completely unique and different. And last year, some of the ones that I remember students came up with was a theme focusing on pasta, noodles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was actually the one that I found the most innovative and interesting. But I'm just curious, again, you were the one who came up with the wrestling concept, where you brought a wrestling ring out onto the ice itself and had a kind of a local touring group then do some matches at the end of the games. Like, what's the process that you go through? And again, what I'm hoping is that the students get an understanding a little bit about kind of where you can come up with some of these ideas, and then how it kind of then plays itself forward.
So the two that really stand out for me, you mentioned the wrestling. So Battle of the Dome 1 and Battle of the Dome 2, I was responsible for, and then it kind of evolved from there. But the other one was our Every Child Matters game with Sitka.
Right.
And I think the biggest part for me is, I'm not sure that I've ever come up with an original idea, but I have listened. And I know for a fact that the wrestling was one of our group sales people came to me and said, hey, could we do something around wrestling? And I said, well, what do you want to do? Could we do a match? And I'm like, why can't we do a match? And that began a whole conversation. I do recognize there's a couple people here who work at CSEC, so they're going to find this funny, but there's a lot of these ideas where people will start at no and work their way back. So the first time I said, well, I'd like to do some wrestling on the ice, you can't do that. Well, why can't I do that? Well, you can't do that. No, that wasn't the question. The question was, why can't you do that? And you begin to unpack all of the reasons. So, well, you know, we can't damage the ice. Well, what if we did it after the ice after the game, before we prepare the ice for the next day? Well, maybe. Well, how are we going to get the ring on the ice? Well, how many people do we need to do this? Let me ask. And you talk to the promoter and goes, well, if you have 15 people, you could set it up in 15 minutes. Okay. So if we got 15 minutes, how do we cover? So you're really, in many cases, you're starting from no and working your way back. But I would suggest to you the one that I'm most proud of is our Every Child Matters game. And I use this example all the time, that I think, and let's just use hockey for instance, but most sports 10 years ago, they would pick a cause and they would do the cause. Let's just say we were going to promote, you know, we were going to celebrate octopuses. So
that's what you come up with.
Yes.
Okay.
So we do an octopus jersey. We get an octopus to sing the national anthem, and we play an octopus video. Great! We celebrated octopuses. You know, nobody does octopuses better than us. And when it came to the Every Child Matters game with Siksika, it was obvious that, you know, we were in this moment of time. We were just going through the truth and reconciliation process. We were just about to learn the hard truths about, about residential schools and all these sort of things. And we sat down with Siksika, who wanted a relationship with the Hitmen, wanted their youth to be able to see themselves in the Hitmen players. So it started with a practice out there. So we went out and practiced, and it was unlike any other practice I've ever been part of. We did a smudging prior to. We had a prayer in which our team took part in. We had announcers for our practice. They had local guys announcing our practice, which was really weird in a way. But, you know, the whole community was there, pushed up against the glass, watching our you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old, 19-year-old players skate around the ice. And then afterwards, they brought us into the gym, and they held a big celebration for us. They did a round dance. They did a mini powwow. They gifted all the players. So they really, as a community, came forward and said, we want this relationship. Well, you can't go into somebody else's house, be treated that way, and then turn around and give them an octopus game. That wasn't going to work. So we began to look at what could we truly meaningfully add to a game to make this, you know, really stand out. So we started with the logo, and you know, I'm adamant about letting artists be artists, right? You know, in this case, you have to let the community, they have to provide it for it. Too often, you know, we would do it as the team because we want to protect our property, our IPs and things like that. But it's a, you know, you're telling a story. Then we began to talk about, you know, the listening part, because Siksika came to us and they said, could we have drummers? Sure. Why can't we have drummers? Well, because, you know, you heard Liam talking about timing sheets, and if any of you worked events, you've probably seen scripts and stuff like that, and people get really protective of their scripts. So you do a lot of, you know, negotiation with your own side. Well, I know this isn't how we normally do it, but this is what we want to do. And then they asked us a ticklish question at that point. Would we be willing to do a land acknowledgement? So now we're talking about 2019, and while land acknowledgements are standard practice, they weren't back then. And it was difficult for internally for some people to understand what the need was. They didn't fully understand it, but you're showing respect. And the first land acknowledgement we did was in the first time out, and we played music underneath it. I mean, we butchered it, like terrible. Just terrible, but we learned, right? You don't know, and they were very good about it. Then what about intermissions? We see you put out, you know, you have contests and everything. What could we do there? Well, you know, could we do some traditional dancing? How do we do it? Well, we need carpet, so we had to get a big carpet in that. So we began that process and went down that process. And I would say, you mentioned wrestling. I operate everything on the WrestleMania 3 theory. WrestleMania 1 proved that this concept would work. WrestleMania 2, you tried some stuff, you kind of still did some learning, but WrestleMania 3, bang, you know, 97,000 people in the saddle, in the Silver Dome, and away you go, you never look back. So I would say our second Every Child Matters game was really the one that began to set the standard, I think, around sports, because we turned the entire jersey over to Siksika Artists, and nobody's ever done that at our level. Nobody ever said, here's our jersey, do with it what you want. I mean, you want to see an old white guy's head pop off his shoulders, tell him you're going to take the jersey and alter it. And we did. We let them tell their stories. So the orange Every Child Matters jersey that you see the Calgary Hitmen play or in and have played in for the last 5 years was never touched by anybody within CSEC. It was completely Indigenous artists. It tells a story. It has porcupine quills on it, the whole nine yards. And I would contend it's probably the most prolific of the First Nations jerseys. I mean, we've seen it used in ceremonies in Ottawa and on the East Coast, everywhere. It's one of the biggest selling jerseys we ever had. But then it was adding Blackfoot broadcasts. It was talking to our partners in radio and saying, we want to do this game in Blackfoot. Will you allow us to do it on Windspeaker Radio? And they would. It was having somebody come in ahead of time and do some content in Blackfoot. It was really taking that game and all of the elements, which we did too in wrestling, because if you look at our second game, we began to have promos during timeouts to set up the game at the end. We were doing vignettes and videos on our social media in the weeks leading up. We really leaned into what that game became. So it's a long way for me to answer your question. My advice is look at the totality of the game. Look at it from prior to puck drop to prior. I mean, you were at the first one because Brett came. Mm-hmm. You were the handler for Brett.
That's
and
right.
We set up two rings that game. We set up Brett's WWF ring. He got a gift from the WWF when he retired. They gave him a ring. He gave us the ring. We set that up on the concourse. And then we had the PWA ring for on the ice. And Brett was kind enough to do an autograph session. Well, what an opportunity if you're a wrestling fan to get an autograph and a picture with Bret Hart in a ring. And you saw it. Like, we went a full hour
Yeah.
And how many people, 800, 900 people moved through there? Like it was nuts.
It was incredible. Yeah. So I was the bouncer. So I was the guy who, you know, tried to manage the line. It was fantastic. Brett was, he was gracious. He was kind. He was willing to give his time. He was just fantastic.
So there's an experience, right? So I'm a big experience guy. I think the phones and everything, we live in that social world, but experience, you know, there was these people whose lives changed because they actually, they watched that wrestling ring all their life, but they never, ever, that was, as much as it was to get a picture with Brett, it was to climb through those ropes for some people.
And so it was an actual ring, like the turnbuckles were the WWF original turnbuckles.
Yeah.
Like, it really was quite neat.
Right.
Just to kind of be a part of that process.
And then that emboldened us to go back to building and say, look, when we do Every Child Matters, we want to set up a teepee on the concourse. We want to have an elder there. And that was another incarnation of it. And so, again, when you're thinking of these theme games, think of them in totality. Think of them in the lead up. How can you use the social channels? How can you tell a story? If you're doing something that benefits somebody, if you're looking at a theme game that is going to have an outcome, you know, you're going to raise money. Look, you want to know the secret of the teddy bear toss? You really want to know the secret of the teddy bear toss? I'll tell you, but you can't share it with anybody, okay? This is a very, very deep secret at CSEC. Here it is, okay? Nobody record this. People like to throw things. They do. That's the secret of the teddy bear toss. If you can come up with another game in which you can get something that people can toss and throw, they will come in droves. People like to throw crap. And trust me, that's what it is for a lot of people. It's that interaction. It's that element. One of the games that we did that we never built on, and I regret to this day, was Obscure Jersey Night. Like, who in this room is going to stick their hand up and say they have an obscure jersey? I have an obscure jersey. You have an obscure, okay? There are obscure jerseys out there. You guys are too young to remember when the Calgary Flames affiliate used to be the Axarban Knights in Omaha, Nebraska. They played there for 2 years. So I got a Knights jersey. At the same time, anybody remember the name? Michael Vick. Quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. Anybody remember why Michael Vick got suspended? Dogfighting, right? And you remember what came out in the dogfighting? That he would check into hotels under assumed name, Ron Mexico. I have an Axarban Knights Ron Mexico jersey because you could not. The NFL banned Ron Mexico from being put on NFL jerseys. The NHL followed suit. The MLB followed suit. The American Hockey League did not. So I have. So anyway, we built a whole game around having people wear the most obscure jersey they have, and that's a personal thing, right? Like, what's obscure? We saw third jerseys, we saw European jerseys and stuff like that. That's the one regret I have. That game could be huge. We did it once, and it was a lot of fun, but we did it on a Tuesday to try to spike sales. It kind of spiked sales. And that's the other thing is, you know, what are you trying to accomplish with that game? Are you trying to spike sales? Are you trying to sell tickets? Are you trying to, because that's going to impact what you do, the entertainment package. Or is it, you know, for charity? And I'm a big community guy. I think, you know, is there anything? I think the National Hockey League should allow you 7 jerseys in a year. Your home, your away, your third, and 4 charity jerseys that you wear in a game and then auction off to support a charity. I think that's how important community is. So when you guys are thinking about these things, somebody's going to say no. I get that. But don't start at no. Come up with wild stuff. And if you are not, I'm assuming it's part of your course now.
It is.
Jesse Cole?
Oh, no, no. So
that should be part of your course.
Yeah. So years ago, they're called the Savannah Bananas. And they are a pro baseball team.
Yeah.
Pro, is that like a,
they are now, yeah.
I mean they're similar to, I guess, to like the Harlem Globetrotters.
But
they've moved beyond
that. They get
their
backs up when you say that.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah.
So they are a baseball team, but they've added the element added, focused on the element of fun.
Yep.
Insofar as the game day presentation, I presume what you're going to say is to check them out.
Online. I think you should, because all of the I mean, they are. I get up and pray at the altar of Jesse Cole every day, because this guy is my modern day Walt Disney, P.T. Barnum. He's got two books out there. You know, he's the one that really kind of emphasized to me the fan first philosophy, and we don't have that a lot in sport. But I think if you look at what they have become and how they go about their business,
they are selling out football stadiums for baseball exhibition games. It really is rather incredible the growth that that team has
when
had.
You consider that he was on that screen talking to your class and they were still in the Carolina Coastal League playing a 42 game wooden bat summer league schedule, and then they quit that just after COVID, and you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
So you know, Rob's referring. So I had heard about them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I heard about them from you or if it's the other way around. But anyways, the two of us had connected about
them. Yeah. Did you see this?
Yeah. And this Jesse Cole, who is the owner and kind of president of the Savannah Bananas, became a bit of an online presence. And so, and this I think is a bit of a lesson for you as students. On a whim, I just sent him a message on LinkedIn. I said, "Hi, I teach event management at Mount Royal University in Calgary, Alberta, Canada," because I wasn't sure he'd know exactly where Calgary was. I said, "I've been following you online. I think what you do is incredible. Would you be willing to speak to my students online for 20 minutes? And he responded almost immediately and said, "Yeah, I'd be happy to do that." And so we arranged the timing, and I think you came to that
one. I came to that one, That one you invited me to.
I knew
to,
you were a bit of a fan, that's right.
Yeah.
And so Jesse Cole spent... And he ended up chatting quite a bit longer than 20 minutes. And he just shared with us his thoughts on event management from the Savannah Bananas perspective. Anyways, like a year later, they just blew up because he had published his book and they became online media darlings. And so I reached back out a second time the year following. And this time I was put through to his manager.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Well, you know, unfortunately, Jesse Cole is now charging $100,000 for a, you know, a keynote address. Is that something, you know, you're willing to consider?" And I'm, no. But thank you very much for getting back to me. And they said, "Listen, we would be pleased to set you up with another person on the Savannah Bananas to chat." And we ultimately decided just not to go down that path. But like, again, we had him speaking just on the crux of before his popularity and his reputation just exploded.
Yeah. And, you know, you know, what was the term, R&D?
Rip off and duplicate.
Yeah, you were there for that. Like, I learned that last week, rip off and duplicate. You heard Liam. They went down to Montana. They watched the game. You really do need to be paying attention, watching. Not even if you're getting a game presentation for a sporting event, you don't need to watch sports only. You can take ideas from everywhere. And it really is that. And you know, trying to get ahead of that curve. I mean, watching, you can see things coming. Like, you know, we were fortunate, I think, in the influence that we had with the two events. You know, the Edmonton Oil Kings just did their, you know, Capital City Rumble and things like that. You know, we had a team out of the ECHL call us and ask us how to do it. And, you know, to me, you're part of a brotherhood, a sisterhood. If somebody's calling you to ask, you share. You know, our staff wanted to do a Harry Potter game when I first got there, and there was a team in the ECHL that was doing a fairly successful one, so we got a hold of them, and they spent an hour with us and walked us through how they set up the different sections by the different schools and the whole nine yards. Again, we need ideas. We really do. You know, it's amazing when I travel around and I see how much is just the same old, and we've got to break that mold. So when you tell me that somebody last year built a game around pasta, you got my attention.
Yeah.
Like I want to know, right? There are so many things out there. They're past me. Like I was at the game last, I don't know if anybody, you and I were there for Shorzy last week, right? Like, what a great implementation of, you know, entertainment, a cross section of sport, and bringing them together. It was natural. They did it in such a really cool way. I think you got to be looking at things like that for those who watch, you know, I haven't got a clue what Traders is, but Crave keeps telling me it's on TV. But I would be looking at that going, is there something there? Squid Games. I mean, I don't watch Squid Games, but I'll tell you, I paid close attention when it was as popular as it was, and how can we we actually had a phone call with the company that was designed Fortnite way back, you know, a decade ago when Fortnite first came out. How can we implement this? Sometimes you get there, sometimes you don't. But you really do need to let pop culture and social things, you know, influence you. You mentioned pets. Like, you know, I've got lots of regrets. One regret is, you know, that damn building's coming down in 2 years, and I never got a chance to, you know, do a dog game there. Now, I got wiener dog racing going, but I never got a game in which you could bring your dog to the arena. And you want to talk about a fight. Now, that was a knockdown, drag-em-out brawl with catering and security and everything about, you know, and they were doing it in the American Hockey League. Why couldn't we do it here? Well, the dogs will crap everywhere. Well, not if we put frickin' dog stations on the concourse. Well, that'll be too close to food and all those sort of things. That's a regret of mine. I didn't fight that one hard enough. I think a dog game at the Dome, you know, and
Now, I also want to point out, I've shared this with students, but I just want to remind them, you can't all have the same theme. And so if you suddenly have this eureka moment where you're like, that's the theme we want to go down, it's first come, first serve. And it's based on email and the time. So if all of you were to email me in the next 2 seconds that you want to do a dog-themed game, whoever gets the email to me first is the group that gets to do it.
Hamster game you may get right away. If you go hamsters, you might get there right away.
But to Rob's point, I want you to start with the most outrageous idea. I want this to be the front page of the Calgary Herald the next day.
You said the four CSEC teams that aren't the Flames, right?
Correct. Not the Stamps. We're just
so doing, three in the Dome.
Correct.
So one of the things you need to do is understand who those markets are, right?
They have been assigned specific teams, so they know that.
Okay,
too.
Yeah. Okay. Because if you went, Vegas had, I don't know if, again, I'm dating myself, I don't know if you guys know, but the Vegas Las Vegas had a ECHL team way before they had an NHL team. And they used to do a midnight game. And they played it right to the hilt in Vegas. So they had pole dancers. They had...
Okay, so maybe not that.
No, but the point being... No. I actually have a saleable point here. Okay. This is important to understand.
Okay.
But they would be able to... You know, the clips, you know, the fun clips you see on the Jumbotron, they're pretty safe. Well, they could play the ones out of Slapshot that weren't safe. And, you know, it was for an adult, 18 plus, you know, because it was played at midnight. You can't pitch that for the Hitmen. The Hitmen are the entry level into the building for kids.
But could you pitch it for the Roughnecks?
Yes, 100%. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's the point I'm trying to make, is if you have your team assigned, understand a little bit about, you know, who the main audience is. Now, I would make the argument that the Wranglers are a free-for-all, because I don't think they've still landed exactly on who the Wranglers are. Sometimes they lean into the Hitmen crowd. Sometimes they lean into the Roughnecks crowd. So I think you have a little bit. That would be my one piece of advice.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back to your example that you were just using from Vegas.
Yeah.
Are there no-goes? Are there topics that should not be considered, ideas that should not be pursued?
Yeah, I think that's a terrible place to start. I think right now in the current environment, I think you want to avoid politics. I don't think either side of, you know, you could do a Canada Forever game and you'll have a whole bunch of wing nuts there saying we want to separate. Or you can say we're our own province and you'll have, you know, the politics right now, it's a tricky place. I think you're going to have a hard time with that. Now, the three teams that you are working with are going to need support for these things. So understand that there is no big giant budget for, say you want to do a rubber duck game. We're going to give everybody a rubber duck. right? Everybody who comes to the game gets a rubber duck. There is no budget for the Calgary Hitmen to buy rubber ducks. You would need to go out. You'd need to get ATCO. You would need to get somebody. So you have to take that in consideration too. And maybe that helps design what you want your idea, because maybe you're looking, and maybe the spark for all of this comes from, geez, I saw, you know, I was about to say Forever 21, but I don't think that's a thing anymore. Lululemon. I was at the mall and I saw Lululemon, and then it gave me an idea for a game. Whatever the thing is, I think those are some of the things to keep in mind. I would stay away from politics in this current environment. And I would also, you can't. I am embarrassed to say that I have of an age group that we took people who were smaller than the rest of us and threw them. Okay. Can't even say, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that sort of stuff, right? You need inclusivity and that type of thing.
Yeah, okay. So I guess what I'm glad that you're helping us understand and recognize is the line, insofar as appropriateness, how far you can push agendas. And ultimately, CSEC's going to have to agree to do this, and there would be reputational risk if they were to take on a concept or an idea or a philosophy and promoting it. It's just, to me, it's an interesting line, because I have seen organizations and teams and leagues push it right to the edge.
Sure.
But again, it's that ability to not go over the edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's in good taste. It's your values. You have to live to your values, right? But I would suggest to you that you need to go right up to the line and look over it. I think you do have to push those boundaries, or you're going to be safe, and safe is death. Again, I go back to, you know, the fights that we had over putting a ring on the ice. Mm-hmm. You know, just the, and it wasn't because anybody didn't like the idea. It was just, well, what if this happens, or what if that happens? Now, my understanding is they don't even put it on the ice anymore. They push the seats back and they put it behind the rink.
Oh.
Yeah, which was a great adaptation, and I would have been there right from the beginning. But you do, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's that fine line of what's in good taste, but I guess it would be the old comedian thing, you know, what's funny, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in some cases, as long as you're not, you know, insulting, right, you know, that sort of thing, push the boundaries.
Well, and that's the part about this project that I enjoy so much, and seeing how the students kind of go through this evolution of thinking insofar as coming up with something that is completely innovative, totally different, not been done before.
Right.
So they have to understand the context, what's taking place, what's popular, what's going to attract eyeballs, what's going to get people's attention, but in both an edgy but also appropriate way. And that's not an easy thing to do. I am not suggesting an easy project.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a fun one, because then, too, it becomes something that you can hang your hat on as a student yourself and talk about in a later time, where you were part of a group that came up with, or, you know, again, it could be a really innovative and cool creation. Another example last year that I particularly liked was an entire game theme focused on dental health. And so one of the things that they wanted to do was to break a world record for the number of people flossing at the same time. And so the game was going to be sponsored and supported by a number of dental offices. And it was a Hitmen game. Young people would come and receive toothbrushes and dental floss. And then at a certain time in the third period, everyone in the entire arena was going to have to be flossing at the same time in order to break this Guinness Book of World Records for the number of people flossing. I think initially what they wanted to do was have one piece of floss that everybody was going to be flossing with at the exact same time. And then I think they recognized perhaps that
hygiene,
that might not work.
Yeah.
And so they pivoted, and they came up with a slightly different approach. But to me, that was a really interesting and unique way of looking at a themed idea that I had never heard or seen before.
I just want to go back to the previous topic about in good taste and things like that. Do you remember kind of the days at the start or just before COVID, and what did we run out of? Toilet paper, right? Everybody was hoarding toilet paper. So we started tossing around the idea of, when this is all over, we should do a toilet paper game where people can come in and pay for things with toilet paper, because they were hoarding all this toilet paper, right?
So instead of a $5 burger, it's,
it's five rolls of toilet paper, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it didn't go anywhere. But, you know, again,
I like good the thinking, taste. Though. And yeah. and so these are the kind of ideas and the things that I want my students to consider or to try to at least pursue and go down those rabbit holes.
I think so. And again, I don't want to scare anybody away from ideas. Just give some consideration to, okay, if we're going to do this, who in this building, in the dome, food and beverage, security, building, who could be transactional in this, right? Who would you have to cross paths with? Who are, you know, and again, my big fight with the dog game started with food and beverage, not even security. Like, we're preparing food here. We can't have dogs shedding in the dome, right? That sort of thing. So give some consideration to those conversations you're going to have to. Who are you going to have to win over? How are you going to win them over? Now, ultimately, and this is not a CSEC thing at all. This is just a pro sports thing. They're businesses. They are businesses. And it's amazing how businesses can move when there's a potential partnership on the horizon, right? If you can make it compelling enough to bring somebody to the table that they can't say no to, you know, you find ways to work with partners, you find ways through things, but you cannot be too creative here. And the other one I would say is try to jump the curb. What's coming down the pipe that you see, that you know about, that you think is going to be big? I wish we moved quicker on TikTok in 2019 when I read a story about teams in the Bundesliga using this new social media program. Oh, cool. That's a great story. And then, you know, here we are all these years later and it's, you know, a huge thing, right? So try to find those things that you're jumping the curb on. What's coming? What's right. What's going to be big? You know, and again, I it's funny to me. We're celebrating the 50th year of Survivor, or 50th Survivor. Wow. Not the 50th year, it'd be 25 years.
The 50th series.
You know, but I remember trying those types of things, mm-hmm. you know. Again, you can't look at entertainment and pop culture enough. Mr. Beast. Is there a Mr. Beast challenge that you can build into a game? Is there something like that? What are, and again, goes back to your audiences. That Roughnecks crew is your age. Okay, so that's a real easy one. But that Hitman one, you know, the biggest cheer, unsolicited cheer we ever got, ever, was the first year of The Mandalorian. We put a picture of who would become Grogu in a Hitman jersey on the screen, and the place went ballistic. No announcement, no music, no nothing. We just flashed it up there. The place went nuts. He didn't even have a name. He was two seasons away from having a name. But, you know, Baby Shark, all of these things. You can't jump into these things sometimes quick enough.
Yeah, you're going to have to talk to your friends maybe who have 12-year-olds.
Yeah, oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay, there's two other projects, and I'm conscious of time, but I want to get your thoughts on the closing of the Saddle Dome.
Yeah, I was at the opening game.
You were at the opening game,
yeah.
1983.
The Oilers beat the Flames.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've seen it through its entirety.
Yeah.
One of the projects students have to come up with, and they have to do this in kind of a Dragon's Den style. They're given about a minute to pitch their idea on how to commemorate the Saddle Dome. Give me some guide rails on how they can go about doing that and perhaps some things that they can think about.
Experiences. I think, you know, to me, in that last year, I would be creating photo capture places, you know. Hmm. There's lots of little pieces in that building that are significant to diehard fans, maybe not to the casual observer. If there was one way of getting them down, maybe it's one of the famous Rick Tulsi tours, but getting them down to the bowl so that they can see the water stain from where the floodwaters were in 2013, that's pretty cool. I'll tell you right now, I would be Kids Sport Calgary is one of my favorite charities. If I was the Flames Foundation, I would be taking all 1,287 seats and auctioning them off for Kids Sport. How many of you have bumped into a bar where you've seen some seats from the old Montreal Forum or Maple Leaf Gardens or whatever? Those things, you know, experiences, give people tangible things that they can take away. For me, not to get too melancholy about it, but it is one of the most significant reminders of what we were and what we became. Again, you guys are probably tired of old people lecturing you about 1988 and the Winter Olympics, but that was truly a transformational moment for this city. Showed the world about volunteerism. It set the standard for what the Winter Olympics would become. We've lost that. We dreamt and we had those games. We don't dream anymore. If there's a way of turning the dome in its final year into some sort of reminder that we need to get back to doing things for greater good, and we need to get back and allow ourselves to dream and have big dreams. I'm going to take the moment to say it, because we talked about it off the top. We talked about a potential Winter Olympics coming here. Can you guys imagine the Winter Games would be here in 3 weeks? And we would be playing arguably the greatest hockey tournaments in the history of the game. We'd be having these incredible female athletes from our country winning medals. We'd be showcasing our city. But we lost. We lost a referendum. And the whole basis of the referendum was fought on, well, we'll just take that money and put it in other projects. Really? Here we are. Where is it? Right? It's the way. You got to dream big sometimes. You got to swing for the fences. You got to, you got to roll a hard six.
Rob was emceeing a summit that I was at last week, Sport for Life, and in his opening remarks, he made comments about the 2026 Games and the loss for Calgary and not being successful in that bid, and I was speaking shortly thereafter, and I made reference to Rob Kerr officially announcing Calgary's bid to host the 2038 Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games, and so...
Well, it's just, one of the things we didn't do in that argument was we didn't get it down to the granular level. But let me look at you guys right now. If the Winter Olympics were coming here in 3 weeks, how many of you would be involved in them in some way right now? Every single one of you. Every single one of you. And this class probably would have been for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And it may be for 2 or 3 years afterwards in terms of legacy play. We were always talking at that 30,000-foot level. We were never, ever doing it at the granular level.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe that was our fault. Maybe we should have done that. But it felt like it was such a no-brainer, and we just didn't fight the fight correctly.
Mm-hmm. And potentially, maybe there's a way with the Saddle Dome's closure to recognize the one door closing, but perhaps another door opening. And could the legacy of the Saddle Dome,
I like that a lot.
Be something moving forward and something in our future. I think that's something worth considering anyways and looking at. The example of the chairs, I think, is an interesting one. It wasn't too long ago I was in the old Maple Leaf Gardens in downtown Toronto on Carlton Street, and it's now a Loblaws grocery store on the main floor, and then above it is Toronto Metropolitan University, formerly Ryerson University, their athletics department. And so the rink is up on the top floor, and the athletics department is just below it. But in the Loblaws, in the grocery store, they've taken a number of the chairs from the blue section, and they've made a giant blue maple leaf on the wall from the chairs. So it's kind of a neat way to commemorate the closure of an iconic facility. Right. And then obviously with the new one further downtown. Have any examples of where other cities have done great jobs in commemorating former facilities?
I think the two that we talked about, Montreal, I wouldn't call them great, but they're memorialized, right? And you're right, Toronto's is now a Loblaws. I used to like going to the United Center in Chicago because they had a marking of the old building in the parking lot and just the size of it and that comparison. Edmonton's about to tear down you know, the Northlands Coliseum. You know, the Queen lived forever at the end of the arena in Montreal, in Winnipeg, and things like that. I think there is the ability to set the bar. I think those are good. Great doesn't come to mind. Now, I could be convinced and I could be shown the way and the errors of my way, but I think there's good, but I don't think great. I don't think the standard has been set yet, and I think it's out there. And I would point no further than the Corral. It's a crying shame that the Corral just went in the night. The history in that building, the uniqueness of that building, the fact that NHL games were played in that building, you know, all due respect. And I maybe there's not that nostalgia out there. Maybe it's just a few of us that want that. But I would suggest to you that the standard could be set with this.
So the last project that I want to ask your input on and ideas on relates to Mount Royal University hosting the men's and the women's national championships in two different years for volleyball. And Mount Royal is very much wanting to set a bar insofar as hosting and customer engagement. What advice would you give to students who are being tasked with trying to come up with innovative and creative ways to ensure, again, that Mount Royal's hosting of those two national championships are the best ever from a university hosting perspective?
So two, I'll give you two things. I'll give you some advice, but I'll also give you a plea. My advice would be the most dangerous words in the English language is, this is the way we've always done it. Don't. Set the bar. Chase. Steal. You know, cooperate with other groups. Find ways of, and I think you've got the right sports, because I think volleyball's just on the cusp right now. The television numbers in the States for volleyball are incredible. I think the Olympics are going to push hard. I would suggest to you that, you know, just don't be satisfied with getting to the bar that somebody else the year before set or a couple years. You're still relatively young in your university life, the school, that I think you have the opportunity to wow and surprise and set the standard. So whatever you do, is don't listen to, well, this is the way we've always done it. The plea that I would make with you is, coming out of the Sports Summit last week and seeing you know, the Jumpstart report coming out and everything like that, I would love you guys to turn it into a recruitment. I would love you guys to turn it into a grassroots celebration of getting kids active in sport. And volleyball is an incredibly easy sport to get kids into, because you can start with smash ball. You have adaptable size of courts. It's to me, it's one of the gender positive sports that both, there isn't a giant difference between the two, and everybody can play, so it's inclusive. So my plea to you would be, let's use it as a way of getting underrepresented communities, getting kids active, and my current number one is getting those pre-tween girls to stay, keep them in sport, and volleyball can be that. So that would be my plea for you.
What are the, like, I want to get right to the granular level, like, what are some of the things that students can think of, consider, that maybe they've overlooked insofar as creating a game day environment that people will be talking about, people will remember, and people will be sharing on their socials, etc.?
People like throwing things.
That's where we started.
They like throwing things. Listen, it's, you know, it's the old adage that, you know, I came for 2 hours, I was entertained for 2 hours, I didn't want to go home. Or I suffered through 2 hours and couldn't wait to leave. Little things like music, you know, I said before, you know, I'd love to get grassroots involved, bringing, you know, young cheerleaders in, giving young dance groups the opportunity, things that make noise, things that clatter, mascots. People love mascots. Giving people experiences, those opportunities, those are what you're looking for. Stayed and true and you know, solid and you know, this is the way we've always done it. And, you know, we don't play, like, I get it's a national championship and I understand there needs to be a certain amount of decorum around that. That part I get. But, you know, the things that the thing, think about it from the perspective of your audience. What are they going to share on social? What are the things that they share? What are the things that you share on social? Where are the pictures that you take with your friends? If you're a family, what's the picture you want to take with your kids? Who do you want to see there? Who do you want to bump into there? There's lots of ways of doing it. There's lots of ways of tackling it. But I think we always get caught in the dollars, right? Well, this is our budget. Okay, and I appreciate that everybody has a budget, but you can be creative. There's lots of people out there looking for the opportunity to share their talent. And I would just, as much as you can make it a festival, as loud as you can make it, as crazy as you can make it, and as fun as you can make it, we lose sight of this all the time. At the end of the day, when all of this began way back before fire, and somebody kicked a rock for the first time, they kicked a rock because it was fun. And we have eliminated fun from so much. We've beaten fun out of it. We've taken fun out of it. I'm sorry. I sit and I watch pro sports right now, and I go, what's fun? You know, what is fun about this? You know what's not fun? Video replay. I hate video replay. Give me human error. I'll live with it. Honest to God, I will. But watching a game and going, oh, was that in? Do we have to review? Oh. I mean, the end of the Seahawks game. Like, how many of you thought the game was over? How many of you thought, oh, well, they got one more shot at it, right? It's not fun. Why isn't this fun? Why aren't we smiling? Why aren't we going away going, man, I can't wait to do this again? The games themselves, the athletes themselves, the coaches themselves, the referees themselves, they'll take care of the tournament part, the games on the, but how come we can't make it fun? How come we can't enjoy it?
That should be their goal, is to hit the jackpot on the fun meter.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's what, yeah.
I agree. Rob, I've just taken a look at the time.
We've solved nothing, haven't we?
We have solved absolutely nothing.
All right, that's what I figured.
And it's the end of class.
That's it.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. The fact that nobody fell asleep was a minor miracle, so thank you.